part 9, the Haggadah series, in the middle of Hallel, after the Suda. It says, Halu es Hashem kol goyim ki gavar aleinu chasta. Chasam Sofer brings the story that there was in Pressburg a group of ganavim, thieves, and they had their eye on this certain wealthy man to rob him. Why dafka him? Because he was blind. He's a rich blind man. He said, hey, you know, it's much easier to steal from blind man. You know, you can, you know, catch him when he's, because he can't see. So they were thinking of a plan, and they devised the following. They knew that they watched him, and they saw he basically has the same routine every day. He gets up, goes here, whatever, and then he goes, does his shopping in town, goes back, and has the same routine every day. Walks down the same street, whatever. So they decided they're going to dig a pit where exactly they know on the place where he walks every day, and he'll fall in. And then they will go in and help him out. And they knew that this rich man, he always has... He has a mishigas that he doesn't want to leave his money lying around. So he always has the money on him. He always has money on him. So this is a great way. And they'll fall in, they'll help him out, and they'll clean him off. Here, let us help you clean him off. And while they clean him off, they clean him off of his money also. So that's what they did. And they made this hole, and they hid out, you know, on the side and watched it to, you know, sure enough, they see him coming down the street, and they're all excited. Okay, here it's going to work, you know. He's getting closer and closer. But then, all of a sudden, he sees this couple of people on the way, and they notice this blind man walking the street. You know, sometimes people like to help blind people, you know. So they say, here, let us help you. And the two guys take his arm, and they start walking with him, and then they see this pit. And they say, oh, they think, oh, you know, okay, so they walk him around the pit, and, you know, so he doesn't, you know, obviously they don't follow the pit, and they keep going. So these Ganavim are like, oh, darn it, you know, they ruined our plans. So, what do we see? This blind man, he knew nothing. He didn't realize how he was saved from the, you know, from being robbed completely from his money, right? Didn't realize, he just found a couple guys helping him walk, and that's it. Right? So he says, so too. Says the goyim have all kinds of plans that they plan against us to do bad to us, and we don't even know. We don't even realize HaKadosh Baruch Hu who's saving us left and right. And sometimes we see it, but many times we don't realize that, you know, before the Hashem, you know, ruins their plans before it even comes to us. So we're like the blind man. We don't even realize all the good Hashem does. They realize it. And therefore, as we say, Halu'as Hashem kol goyim. The goyim are going to praise Hashem. Why? He gavar aleinu chasta. When they see, wow, look, their God is protecting them. We don't have a chance to even do what we want to do. Hashem is protecting us. Like these ganavim saw how, you know, there was this blind man was being protected, and the blind man didn't even realize it. There's a story here that the king of Bohemia was. Once one night he had trouble falling asleep. So he couldn't. He was back and forth on his bed, turning this way, that way. Couldn't fall asleep. So he decided to maybe get some fresh air. So he goes out on his porch, you know, over which is on the upper floor, looking over a nice view, whatever. So he says, "I need to get some fresh air. You know, maybe it'll help me fall asleep after." So he's standing there on the porch, you know, looking out, whatever, and he notices that these two guys, like, almost like they're sneaking, you know, with some, like bags in their hand or whatever. He looks, thinks they're like they're thieves, you know. So he says, oh, wow, I don't believe it. So he calls his guards. He goes, go, you know, arrest those two, those men. So they run down, whatever. They grab them, and they bring them to the king. He says, okay, we caught them. So the king says, aha, you see, they caught you red-handed. What's in that bag? Open the bag. So they open up the bag, and they see in there a dead baby. So the king says, well, what's going on over here? So, okay, they were forced to admit, and they said, well, the Komer, the priest, he gave us this baby, and he told us to hide it out in the house of the Rav, So if you want to make a libel against the Jews, because it was just before Pesach, and a blood libel, the Jews, you know, killed the Goyish baby to have take the blood for their matzahs, whatever, usual thing. And he gave us some money and told us to do this, and we were on our way. That's all. So the king said, oh, that's what happened. Oh, okay, fine. So he says, well, listen, if the Comer told you to do that, the priest told you, so, okay, so go do it. So they took the baby and they ran and they planted it in the Rav's house, which was none less than Rav Yonas and Eibishitz. So next day, there's a missing child, one of the children of the Goyim is missing, and they started investigations and they said, okay, let's look here, look there, and they said, okay, let's look in the Rav's house. So sure enough, they go into the basement of Rav Eibishitz and there's the dead baby. So he said, ah, we knew it, you know. He's using the matzahs, the whole thing. Okay, so they arrested Rav Yonas Eibishitz, and they took him to be judged. So the Komer gets up and says, you know, you see this, we found the baby, we knew it, the whole thing. And Rav Yonas says, what is he going to do? He's going to say, I don't know anything about it. They're not going to believe him. So he didn't know what to do. So the king was there at the trial, and he said to Rav Yonas, listen, Harav, before you answer up or say what you have to say, I want to ask you a question. The king says to him. So the Rav Yonas says, okay. So he says, it says in the Tanakh, it says, Hine lo yanum lo yishan shomer Yisrael. Right? So he says, what's the double lashon? Hine lo yanum means to sleep, but lo yishan, sleep. Shomer Yisrael, Hashem is the Shomer Yisrael. He's lo yanum, lo yishan. He doesn't sleep. He doesn't sleep. Why do you have to say twice sleep? So, okay, interesting question. Know exactly what to do with anything, but he says our rabbis already explained this, right? Hine lo yanum. That means Hashem, you know, is always awake and never sleeps. And the second time. It says that v'lo yishan means even when we are sleeping, Hashem is still guarding us. Okay, He doesn't sleep, and even when we're sleeping, He's awake and guarding. That's a double lashon. So the king said, "I have a different shot. I have a different shot in this tilling." Says what? Hine lo yanum is going on the, like you said, the God doesn't sleep. And what's the second v'lo yishan? That he doesn't let other people sleep sometime when he wants to shomer Yisrael. Meaning, that's what happened last night. Right? I couldn't fall asleep. I never had a problem sleeping. Hashem didn't let me sleep last night. Why? So I can find these two guys. They were planning this whole thing to get you into trouble. And I revealed their plot. So we see, Hashem doesn't sleep. He doesn't let other people sleep in order that... To save the Jews, because he's a Shomer Yisrael. Mm-hmm. That's the Halos Hashem Kol Goyim Ki Gavaleinu Chastor. Right, that Hashem is there's Chesed verse, and he said that the Goyim praise is going to they can see the Yad Hashem and how He tries to help us. He says on the Ketav Emes Hashem LoOlam. Said that once a chiloni, a non-religious askan, he said that I heard that says in the Torah that sheker doesn't have any raglaim, doesn't have any feet, unless there's a little bit of emes there. You know, sheker doesn't have any hole. You can't lie unless there's doesn't have any hole unless there's some emes there. A little bit of emes then. So he said, fine, it's true. So he said, okay, so here it is. Our party, my political party, whatever, is alive and kicking. It's doing okay. So what is that a sign? It must be emes. Must be some emes over there. Because even you agreed, even sheker, a little bit emes, and it gives it kiyum. And my party has kiyum, has existence, it's around. So obviously there's emes there. So he said to him, don't get so excited. First of all, a little bit of emes, fine. You're right. There's a little bit of emes in your party. So he says, you know what the emes is in your party? The Emes says in your party, when you say about the other parties, how this, these are a bunch of scoundrels, and these guys don't know what they're doing, and these are, and all the Lashon Hara speak, those are the, that's the Emes in your party. A little bit. Okay. We go on to the Hadol, the Hodu Lashem Kitov Kilo Lomchasto, as we say in Hadol. So he brings here a word which I've heard from Rav Lef. It's no coincidence, because it's based on what was said by Rav Eliezer Gordon, the Rosh Yeshiva of Telz, founder of Telz. So once he went to Kiev to a very wealthy man in order to, you know, get a donation for Yeshiva. So he went into him and he said to the guy straight in the face, "I want you to give me 500 rubles." So he says, so he's described, now just to give you an idea of 500 rubles, says, he says there was a fire in Radin and half the town was destroyed. And the Chafetz Chaim raised the money to fix up that half of the town, 200 rubles. Okay? So to fix up half a town's school, he asked this guy a donation of 500 rubles. Just give me an idea. He says, what we're talking about here. So he said to the Gvir said to Rav Gordon, he said, "You're joking. You're obviously joking. We need 500 rubles. What do you?" So he said, "No, I'm not joking. If I was joking, I could joke in my house. I don't have to come here to make jokes. You know, 500 rubles." So he says, "Listen, Rabbi, if you can explain to me how you expect me to, you know, to part with like 500 rubles like that, I mean, okay, I'll consider it." So he said, "Okay, I'll give it my best." So Gordon said the following: says that it says that we have a Torah, a mitzvah in the Torah called Meiser Behema. Right, person takes all his kosher animals that were born in that certain time period in the year, and he puts it in like a corral, whatever, and he opens up a little opening, and he starts counting them 1, 2, 3 as they leave. He makes, you know, they come out one at a time, and he counts them one up till 9. Then the 10th one, he puts puts a red paint on it, and that's Baisa Behema. And he puts aside every 10th animal. Like 1/10 goes to the base of Mikdash. So he said, imagine, okay, here. But he says, but when you think about it, he says, what's somebody like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? Gemara says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was so wealthy that his miser, the miser was a year, was 12,000 animals, was his miser, meaning that was 1/10. Means how many did he have? 120,000. A year he had the animals born. 120,000 a year. Now go ahead and do Meiser with 120,000 animals. Put in 1, 2, 3, 10, right? He said, "Well, why did the Torah say to do? Wouldn't it be much simpler? Is to say how many there are? 120,000. Fine, so take 12,000 and finish. What if they start counting? You have to count the 120,000 and one at a time, and just say take 12,000 and finish." Isn't it a pain, I think? So he said, the answer is that the Torah understood people. Right? You're going to go to these rich guys, as rich as he might be, but it says, give 12,000 of your animals. He goes, "Oh, that's crazy, so many animals." So what did the Torah do? Devised the following method. He said, okay, fine, it's hard. It's hard to do that, hard to part with all that. So let's do it a little differently. Put them all in the corral, fine. Open the door, fine. So now go like this. First animal, mine. Second animal, mine. Third animal, mine. Fourth animal, mine. Fifth, mine. Sixth, mine. Seventh, mine. Eighth, mine. Tenth. Kaddish Baruch Hu. Not so bad. All that's mine. And again, next one. One, mine. Two, mine. Three, mine. Tenth. Kaddish Baruch Hu. It's much, much easier to part that. So he said to this rich guy, same here. This big factory of yours, keep it. It's yours. See these big buildings? Those are yours also. And there's a bet that he was getting like the 500 rubles. So bad. He said, okay, fine. You got me. Okay. Say, Mina Meitza Karastika, Nani Bamarcha, Hashem Li Lo Ira. He says, that there's once a person had a certain medical issue, and they had to had to have an operation or whatever, so they tried to find the best doctor, and they found a doctor in America. So they had to fly him to America and to have to, you know, to be treated over there. So he said to the people involved, you know, with the, taking care of this person, you know, the following here, he asked him. He said, listen, he says, this guy you're taking to this doctor in America, right? You looked around, you found, it's just, well, where's the best doctor, you know, because there is seriousness, you know, life threatening over here, you have to find the best doctor, understandable. Fine, and you found this doctor in America. Fine. Now, after, Bezrat Hashem, everything should go well, and he'll, operation will go well, successful, and he'll be healthy. This guy has to bend Shagomel? Yeah, Shagomel. Now, even besides that, even if we're not for the operation or whatever, this time when you fly overseas and you come back, whatever, you have to bench a Gomel. For the why? Because that's the flight's dangerous. Going overseas, whatever, so you bench Gomel when you fly. So this guy, when he comes back, he'll have two reasons to bench a Gomel. Right? One reason, because of the operation that he entered, the serious operation he went through and was successful. And a second, because he arrived safely over from the plane. Two reasons to say a Gomel, right? Fine. He says, let me ask you a question. He says, why is it, both these were dangerous situations, right? The operation and flying. Yeah. So how come when it comes to the operation, you investigated nonstop to find the best doctor? I can understand why, right? Dangerous, you want to find the best doctor. You know, do this a dangerous thing. So he says, how come you didn't do those same investigations to find the best pilot? Did you look into the pilot? Which pilot is this? Is this pilot good? That pilot good? No, you just bought a ticket. Well, did you look into the pilot? They're both dangerous situations. When it came to the doctor, you looked at where's the best doctor, where's the best doctor, right? It's dangerous. When it came to flying, which is also dangerous, you also bench normal, did you look into the pilot? So they said, interesting question. I don't know, that's true. You know, why, you got us. But, so he says, no, he said, the answer is very simple. He says, you know why you don't look into the pilot? He says, because the pilot also flies on the same plane as you. Meaning, if he's personally involved, he'll do a good job. Because his life is at stake also. You don't have to worry about him. He said, the doctor, he's operating on somebody else. Okay, if he's not so good, it's dangerous. It's not dangerous for him, it's dangerous for the patient. So he might not be so careful. So you have to make sure you get a good doctor. But a pilot, you don't have to look into, because he's going to do a very good job. Because his life's at stake just as your life is at stake. So he's in the same boat with you, you don't have to worry. So Mele says, that's Pshat over here. It says, Hashem li, since Hashem is with me, in my tsaras, wherever, whatever, I promise, Hashem is with me. Since Hashem is with me, lo ira, I don't have to be scared. Because like the dog, like the pilot that's with you, he's not, you don't have to worry, because he's going to do a good job. So since Kivyachal, Kodesh Baruch Hu is with Hashem li, therefore, lo ira, I don't have to be scared, because he's with me together in the same boat. On the pasuk we say, "Tov lachasos b'Hashem imetoch b'nedivim," to trust Hashem. He brings Maisa. He says once he was being taken to give us a talk in a place called Mazkeret Batya. It's near Rehovot, the city near Rehovot. And this is in the Chodesh Elul, whatever. And in the middle of the, as they're driving, the driver says, oh, you know, we made a Torah program here in Yavne, and where people come to learn between 5 and 8 at night, and he says, we want to show you. So he wasn't really interested. He had a speech, you know, to give in the Masjid Batya, but they said, no, you have to see. Fine. So he took him to this place in Yavne, and he says, Mama, she was like, he was taken aback. He was, there's a whole bunch of people, 40, 50 people that are balabatim, they're working the whole day, and then at night, between 5 and 8, they come and they learn. And the base medrash is Toses, says, you know, everybody learning, and he was mamash impressed. So he gave they asked him to give a few words of chizuk to them, and she did. Then afterwards, one of the balabatim there, you know, that was learning, came up to me, says, can I have a word with you privately? I want to ask you something. So he says, listen, I'm in a real big rush. I'm supposed to really, no, you're supposed to be here. I'm supposed to speak in this other place. And then he says, no, please, it's very important. So he says, okay, fine, very important. So he takes him to the side. So the man tells him like this. He says, I work as a diamond polisher, whatever, and full day, and I come home at 4 o'clock from work, and I have a problem. I come home at 4, I grab something to eat or whatever, freshen up a little bit, and then head here to the, you know, to the Beis Medrash to learn between 5 and 8. So my wife, though, has tinnitus. She's complaining. This is why. She says, because, you know, she says, the whole day he doesn't see me. I come home and grab a bite to eat. And then that's a time of, you know, when it's called Shat Lachatz. That's where, you know, it's a difficult time. That's when the kids have to be put to sleep and dinner and then between 6 and 8. That's a very difficult time at home. And she says, and here you just disappear and leave me with everything, the kids and the bathing and the food and everything. And you're just taking out and you're having a good time. They're learning in the Beis Medrash. And I'm stuck with the kids. And it's not fair. So I don't know what to do. I mean, she's got a good point, you know. Such a it's, you know, I have a time to learn every day. It's very good, and so I don't know what to do. So Yaakov told him, "Listen," he says, "I don't have time to get through, you know, to spend a lot of time with. But I can give you a first date. First date, and next time we speak, well, you know, we can discuss it further. I can give you a first date." He says, "Okay, good. What can I do?" So he does like this. He says, "Here's what you do." He says, when you come home tonight, he says, tell your wife that they decided to open up another branch of the diamond factory or whatever in Ashdod. And they asked me to put in extra hours between 5 and 8 or whatever in this factory. They need extra help over there, diamond polishing, whatever. And of course they're going to give me, you know, extra money for that, you know. And to ask her what she thinks about the idea. Okay? If she says to you, money, shmoney, forget it, I need you at home, so then stay at home and help her. So, but if she says, oh, money, you know, extra money, sounds good, we could, Chagimah coming up, you know, fine, great, you know, why don't you do that? She says, fine, then you can come here and learn, stay here and learn. So he says, but isn't that like lying to her? You know, he got the story about this extra job, and isn't that lying to her? He says, no, he says, that the Torah is Yikarehi Mipninim. See, it's like diamonds. And so he told her. So here, the difference is, instead of you're not polishing other people's diamonds, you're polishing your own diamonds for your Olam Haba. So you're not lying, you're polishing diamonds, your own diamonds. Okay. So that was it. He was in a big rush. He left. He says, after the chagim or whatever, or he happened to go by in Yavne. He goes, oh, I want to go check out, see what happened with this guy. You know, and I gave him the first day. So he goes there again, and the guy sees Rabbi Yaakov. He runs up to him. He goes, oh, Rabbi, you know, I want to thank you so much. Your mamish, you helped me so much. So he says, well, what happened in the end? So Maisie sees him learning there, so it's a good sign. So he said, yeah, well, he says, I did what you said, and I told my wife that they offered me this extra, you know, maskort, extra salary, when I go and polish diamonds between 5 and 8, and whatever. And she said, good, great, extra money, you know, wonderful, go. So then I came to learn over here. So then, you know, came the chagim, whatever, and she said, well, where's the extra money? We're supposed to have all this extra, where's the extra money? So I told her that this money does not come at the end of the month. It comes later on in the next world. So she picked up the eighth and she says, wow. She says, if that's how you look at Torah, that's so chashuv to you, it's like diamond. She says, fine, I don't mind, you can stay. You can stay learning. So I stay learning. So then Rav Yaakov said to him, so he says, now you can go to your wife and you can tell her the following. That if she's prepared to sacrifice to take care of the kids or whatever without you, then you can tell her that she's also working a full-time job in diamonds as well, and you're going to get, Bezrat Hashem, double salary. Your salary and her salary also you're going to have in the next one. Okay, it says... It says, "Lo amuski yechia." Rabbi Melech said, "I'm not going to die. I'm going to live." So how can he say such a thing? Everybody dies. I'm not going to die. I'm going to live. What's your shot? So he says, based on the Chazal and Brachas Daf Yud Ches, that says that a Rishayim b'chayehem kri mesi. The Rasha in his lifetime is called dead. You know, he's physically alive. He's basically dead. So that's what he wants to say. Lo amu chiyechia, that I'm going to not be dead in my lifetime. I'm going to stay alive in my lifetime. And vasaper maaseka. Say, so I'll give you thanks that to you, Hashem, that when you give me suffering, and it's to Yeshua, Vatihili Yeshua, to salvation. So he says that we don't always see the salvation. We don't always in this world, at least. And sometimes a person has suffering his whole life, and he dies, after. But he should know that it's still, that doesn't mean it's not a salvation. It's not a salvation in this world. It's a salvation for him in the next world. It saves him in the next world of suffering. He brings the famous Maisa, in the name of other Rabbanim. Here he brings the name of the Note of Yehuda. It's a famous story that, let's say, Bekitzer, this guy came into the Note of Yehuda. He was crying. He said, Rabbi, my whole life is tsaris and this, or that, I don't know what to do. What can I do? So Note of Yehuda says, okay, calm down. I'll sit here for a few minutes. I'm just finishing up my learning here. We'll discuss it. So fine, the guy's sitting there waiting for Note of Yehuda. In the meantime, he kind of dozes off, while he's sitting there waiting. And as he's sleeping there, he's dreaming. He has a dream. And in his dreams, he sees he's being brought to judgment in the next world. And it's a big scale. And they say, okay, let all the Averas go on this left side of the scale. And it gets way down on the bottom. He said, okay, now time for the mitzvahs. Mitzvahs go on the other side of the scale. So all the other mitzvahs start coming. Scale's going down. But the side of the veers is much heavier. It's nothing near. So the guy's like, oh my gosh, I'm doomed. That's it, So they said, and the base say, no, wait, it's not over yet. It says, does this guy suffer? Does any suffering let it go on the side of the mitzvahs also? Oh, the suffering started piling up. Oh, more suffering. Then it started getting lower and lower, until it was exactly even. So then, that was it. So then they said, okay, the psak is, though, he's chayav. That's it. So then he said, oh no, I'm chayav. He said, no, isn't there any more suffering? Any more suffering? Please, get you by any more suffering? And he wakes up. So the he says, can I help you? He says, no, everything's fine. No problem, suffering is okay. Yeah. So he brings a very nice mashal for this from Rav Elia Lapian. He says, Rav Elia once told him, he said, you want to hear some chizik? Listen to what we were taught in Kelm. He says, there was once a woman that she was barren, she didn't have children for many years, and finally she had a child, son. So you can imagine, the simcha, finally having a boy, and this boy was so, dear to her, she never left her side. So wherever she went, this boy went with her. So one day she went shopping, she goes to the grocery store, and she's taking some vegetables, whatever, and she didn't realize the boy's kind of wandering off a little bit in the store, and he goes to the section where the eggs are. And there was a whole, a box of eggs, and the kid's playing around, kicking there, boom, the whole box of eggs, boom, falls on the floor, psh, all the eggs are there. And a mess, obviously, the whole thing. So the store owner, the woman, whatever, she runs over and she says, hey, how do you take care of your kid? Look at this. You know how much loss I have? There's a whole box of eggs over here. It costs a lot of money. And what's going to be? Can you watch your kid? She says, yeah, screaming. So the woman apologized and she says, please don't worry. I'm sorry, but I understand. You don't have to suffer any loss. Don't worry. I'll pay for every egg that was broken. I'll pay for the whole box of eggs, and not only that, I'll pay for the cleaning. For the cleaning and the agvas nefesh that you went through for having the break rigor. I'll pay for everything. Now, says, now imagine the storekeeper. Is she happy? Yeah, in a certain way, she's happy. Why? Because she at one shot, she basically sold all these eggs and got the money for all these eggs and the extra money for cleaning and agvas nefesh, whatever, in her pocket money as well. Otherwise, if this wouldn't have happened, she would have to have sold all the eggs, and selling eggs, and some take more, some take less, and some people don't pay right away, they take on credit, and some people will bargain, they want to pay less, and in the end, it's not easy to sell this whole box of eggs. Here, in one shot, boom, she gets the money for the whole thing of eggs, and with the extra money on the side. So is she happy? She says, not bad, she's pretty good now. So he says, however, would she want this kid to come in and smash these eggs every day? Maybe not. You know, probably not. I mean, you know, Bidi Yavid, he did it, so it's good. She doesn't have to sell the eggs, she gets the money. But to come in and break the eggs like that, probably not. So he says, that's the, what's the Nimshal? It's the same way with Yisuri. Right? When a person suffers, it's a very good thing. It's wonderful. It takes away of our, you know, like we said, it goes on the scale with the mitzvahs, and it's great for Olam Haba. It's a wonderful suffering. But it's still a Bidi Yavid thing. We don't, like, want it. It might be good, but you still don't want it. You still don't want it. It's like the woman. It's good that she gets the money for that, but she doesn't want it to happen. So, too, Yisurin are exactly the same way. Brings also in the same Indian story that once Napoleon, the French Caesar, he was conquering the European, in the all of Europe, and then he broke into Russia. He was to conquer Russia, and there was one city though he was not able to conquer in Russia. So they didn't want to give in. So he put a siege around the city, and he was trying, and he couldn't conquer this one city. So the general, one of his generals, said, forget it. You know, it's not going to happen. We're wasting our time, so much effort in this one city. They're not giving in. We can't get in. I says, forget it. It's not worth it. So he didn't want to. He said, no, not so fast. He says, I'm not giving in so fast. So he says, what do you propose to do? So he says, first I want a little spying out before I give in. I'll spy out. So, in other words, why? He said to this general, he says, you speak Russian fluently, right? He says, yeah. He says, okay, so here's what we're going to do. We have a couple of prisoners of war here that we caught, some officers, Russian officers. You'll take their uniform and wear the uniform, disguise yourself as a Russian officer, and you'll take me along, and I'll, Napoleon says, and I'll dress myself up as like your servant, and because I don't speak Russian, whatever you do, and then we'll go in to the into Russia, and then we'll do a little spying, we'll see what the matzav is and whatever, and then afterwards we'll make a decision what to do. So the general said, oh no, you're going to go, it's dangerous. Okay, me, whatever, but you're the Napoleon, you're going to go into Russia like that. Okay. He says, no, I can't take you. He says, no, you have to take me, I'm going, I don't care, I like the challenge, you know, we're going. So the general, okay, could no choice. So he took the uniform, dressed up, and Napoleon dressed up whatever, as a servant, whatever, and they went. So they came to the to the Russian thing and the city, and they said a password or whatever, and they let him in, and they find. So they decided, look, where's a good place to get like information? At the bar, you go to the tavern, the soldiers are sitting and drinking and talking and shooting about this and about that. That's where you can pick up the information. Fine. So they're sitting there, one of the tables, kind of listening in what's going on, and they see these group of soldiers, and they're talking and they're saying, it's very difficult to siege, Napoleon has on us here, and we're tired, and it's hard to keep him out, and especially like the south side of the city where they're weak, and who knows, they can break in over there, and that. Oh, okay, so they're getting all this information, oh good, weak on the south side. So it's okay, good, so they're happy now, they see that, what to do. So all of a sudden, though, one of the soldiers there was in the group, of Russians, gets up and says, "Wait a minute!" He says, "Look over there." And they look, and he says, "You see, there's that officer, and there's that servant." He says, "That servant is no less than Napoleon himself. That's him. That's him. I can tell. That's him." So he said, "Are you joking? That's Napoleon's ear sitting here. He's a servant to this. This is a Russian officer. Why would Napoleon be a servant to a Russian officer?" But he says, "I don't know. Probably the Russian officer is also in disguise," which was true. So he said, "Ah, come on! What are you crazy?" He said, "Yeah. Says, well, does it hurt to check it out? Let's check it out." So they said, okay. So they send one of the soldier, whatever, and he kind of like walks over towards the table. So then they heard this was going on, So they said, we gotta pick up the play, we gotta make it look really good here, So So the general, in disguise, you know, says Napoleon, he says, Skilu, it's a servant, he says, listen, I want another drink. So here, take this cup and get me another drink. So Napoleon, you know, takes the cup and he's about to drink and he like trips and he falls. And the class breaks with that. So the general says, you fool, you idiot! And he grabs him by the neck, he lifts him up, he says, get, trust me, tell, whack, whack! He smacks him across the face, like, boom, boom, whatever. Anyways, this is the Russian guy's watching this, and he's like, he comes back to the table, he says, forget it, obviously not Napoleon. I mean, he's like, who's going to smack Napoleon on his face, to grab him by the neck, smack him, forget it, and it's obviously not him, you know. He said, okay, fine, that was it, they were safe, and then they went back to the thing, they went back. Anyway, so as they're leaving the city, they get out and they're going back home, you know, the general says, you know, I feel terrible, you know, and how can you ever forgive me? You know, I smacked you across the face like that and, you know, I feel terrible, you know. So he said, are you joking? He says, your slap saved me. If you would have not done that, acted like that and slapped me like that, then I would be hanging on a tree right now, you know, so your slap saved me. So Mela, so that's a nimshal. So too, Kosh Baruch Hu slaps us sometimes, but we think, oh, it hurts. Those Yisurin, they save us. Those who could be a lot worse. Hashem takes it out on us with our little Yisurin here and there, so we have to suffer the big time in the next world. So there's slaps. The slaps save us. Okay, we say also in Halal, Evin Masu Habonim Haisal Rosh Pina. That the Evin, which is the Masu, is despised. Evin that the Bonim, the despise, became a Rosh Pina, became a cornerstone. So the Rabbi Yonis and Ibishitz, he learns out from here, darshan's out, that when it says in the Evin, that refers to the Yetzer Hara. And the Yetzer Hara is at first something masu, disgusting, but in the end is good. Why? Because then it wants a person, even though he was, you know, tricked by the Yetzer Hara, but then he does tshuva, and then mevachom shebali tshuva omdim, and you can worry omdim. So in the end, it's good. Haytala rosh pina. So he says, understand the Yetzer Hara, because I'll say has seven names. These are seven names. Ra, Arel, Tame, Sone, Michshol, Evin, and Sfoni. Seven names. So he asks, why doesn't Yetzer Tov have seven names? Why only the Yetzer Hara? So he says, he gives the following mashal near the Navarduk to answer this question. He says, there was once an Avreich, simple living, very, you know, just... minimally bread and water, one day he gets a call from a lawyer. He says, are you so and so? He says, yeah. He says, well, we have some good news and some bad news. He says, what's the story? He says, well, you have this relative live in such and such a place, and a distant relative, and he was nifter. He says, okay, Baruch Dayanam, you know. He says, that's the bad news. The good news is that you're his soul inheritor, and he's leaving you, we haven't finished exact, but it's basically $30 million. So he's like, oh, okay, sounds good. So he says, okay, well, you know, work out the details, whatever, but basically around $30 million. Good. So he gets the money, puts it in his bank, and fine. One day, he gets a knock on the door, he opens the door, who is it? It's the Yetzer Tov. Yetzer Tov gives him his card, says, here you go, Yetzer Tov, and can I have a word with you? So the Avreich says, sure, come in, sit down. He says, what can I do? He says, well, I want to offer you an investment. You know, $30 million you got, I want to offer an investment, you know, make your good use of your money. He says, yeah, what do you have to offer? He says, well, we'll take your money, $30 million, we'll give you monthly a little bit just to, you know, barely just to live off of, you know, make ends meet or whatever, minimally. But in the end, this $30 million is gonna be worth 100 times that amount. And in charge of the care and of the thing is the capital is Kodesh Baruch Hu himself, and the guarantors are Moshe Rabbeinu and Rabbeinu Akadosh. What do you say? She says, "Wow, sounds very tempting, but give me a couple of days to think about it." It's fine. A few minutes later, again the doorbell rings, opens the door, who is it? says, hi, my name, he pulls out his card, my name is Michshol. One of the names of the Yetzer Hara, right? Michshol. Here's my card, Michshol and Company, and may I have a word with you? I says, sure. He comes in. He says, I have an investment offer for you. So he goes, somebody was here already. He goes, oh, who? Oh, probably the Yetzer Tov, right? No, yeah. Let me see. That's nothing. I have a much better offer for you. He says, what's that? He says, you give me your 30 million, okay? And I, right off the bat, I'll give you a check for 60 million. You can, because why wait? You, this guy's offering you all this money, but you have to wait for it. Here, I'll give it to you right now. 60 million right now, and then we'll use your money, and then, to the thing, and in the meantime, but you have the money right away. So he says, where are the guarantors? He says, I don't need guarantors. Guarantors, if you promise something later on, but here, I'm giving it to you right now. Here it is, 60 million. You know, what do you have to, you have all that money. I says, okay. He says, sounds good. Sounds good. I get right away, double my money, and then, okay, fine. So he says, okay, you got it. So he says, fine, so give me a check of 30 million. So he gives him a check of 30 million, and Michshol gives him a check for 60 million, whatever it goes. He says, here, I can go to the bank, and says, oh, great, fine. So he says, I better go to the bank quickly, before something happens, So he runs to the bank, and he goes to the guy behind the desk. Says, here, I want to cash the check, 60 million. He looks at it, he goes, forget it. He says, what do you mean, forget it? He says, I want to cash the check. He says, this count is in minus. I can't give you a check of 60 million. You're crazy. They're in mine. I can't give you 60 million. He goes, what? He goes, yeah, you're fooled. He says, what? He fooled me. I gave him $30 million. And he goes, I got to cash this guy. So he runs out of the bank. He's looking and looking all over for him. Where is he? Where is he? Where is he? And he sees him. He sees him. So he runs over to me. He grabs his, you thief, you thing. He goes, turns around and says, excuse me, who are you? What do you mean, who are you? You were in my house a few minutes ago, and you gave me the check for 60 million. It was worthless. They sent it back. You don't have any money. You're in mine. I said, when I says, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know who you are. He says, what do you mean, you know what you're talking about? You were in my house. I says, what do you mean? Who was in your house? In your house? Michshol was in my house. You're you. What are you talking about? So he pulls out his card, and he says, my name is Evan and Company. The other name, the Yetzer Hara, right? Evan. So he says, that's why the Yetzer Hara has seven names. In order to fool you, cheat you. That's the seven names of the Yetzer. Okay, I've got it.